You've reached the Monetization Matrix with me, your host, Christian Hansen, your expert with insights into payment and subscription strategies, where I discuss how to help you monetize your products and services for growth. Welcome to the Monetization Matrix with me, your host, Christian Hansen, where today our topic is chargebacks attack. So, what is a chargeback? Why do they matter? Well, chargebacks are not your friend. Chargebacks suck. Chargebacks can ruin your business. They could potentially even put you out of business. So, why are they a big deal? Well, I'm gonna quote my good friends over at Investopedia.com. A chargeback is a charge that is returned to a payment card after a customer successfully disputes an item on their account statement or transactions report. Another way to think about it is it's a payment dispute. It's basically forcibly reversing a charge from the issuing bank back to the consumer's card. So, what is this in like real people, layman's terms? Well, typically it's a form of fraud or abuse, and it happens in a couple of ways. One could be criminal fraud, which is pretty scary, right? Like someone stole your credit card or your debit card and they went on a shopping spree. They started buying a bunch of things. So there is criminal fraud involved. Another reason why chargebacks might happen is merchant fraud. So think about it in terms of maybe someone said, hey, this is a $300 Gucci, I don't know, sweater. Obviously, Gucci sweaters are not $300. So you go home, you find out, hey, this isn't a real Gucci sweater. So the merchant lied to you. So they sold you goods that were fraudulent. So now you have recourse to call up your credit card and say, hey, this is fraud. This isn't what I thought it was when I purchased it. The third main bucket for chargebacks comes from merchant errors. So think about it in this way. You go into a store and you buy two t-shirts and a pair of pants, but maybe they charge you for a jacket on top of that, a jacket that you never received. And so now you need to call, maybe you try to resolve it with the store. The store says, nope, we sold you that. So now you have to call up your bank or your credit card company and say, hey, I didn't buy this jacket. I bought some pants, but I definitely didn't buy this jacket. So now you are trying to claim merchant error. So when you think about these things in aggregate, these point towards a poor customer experience. Something bad happened and the customer is in a position where they feel like there's nothing else that they can do in order to get back their funds. Now, that's not necessarily always the case. Hopefully, and this is something we can talk about a little bit later, hopefully they have contacted the merchant. Hopefully they've reached out and said, hey, I don't think that this charge is legit. Can I get a refund? Can this be canceled? I want my money back. So there's obviously ways to mitigate chargebacks. But I think first, let's talk about why they can be so bad. First and foremost, chargebacks are expensive to you as a merchant. They are indicative of something that has gone wrong. This can actually be traced all the way back to 50 years ago, 1974, the Fair Credit Billing Act, which basically gave consumers more confidence in using credit cards. And it has a lot to do with liability shift. People back in the 1950s and 60s, as credit cards became more and more popular, debit cards were kind of worried that, well, what could happen if someone uses this card in a manner that is not conducive to what I as a consumer would have done with it, hence fraud. But this Fair Credit Billing Act made it such that consumers now had a voice. Consumers could go back to their banks. They could say, this is not something that I purchased. And the issuing bank, the bank that gave them their card, could then give them a provisional refund and put those funds that they are disputing back into their account. So with that being said, how does a chargeback happen? A chargeback has multiple steps involved. First, a consumer must file a chargeback with their bank. This could be a phone call to Capital One, to Chase, Sapphire, to Discover, and or it could be online nowadays, and they could just say, hey, I dispute this. This is not a charge that happened. Second, after the chargeback has been initiated and filed with the bank, with the issuing bank, the issuing bank must then review the claim from the dispute from the consumer, and they will take a look at it. They'll assign a reason code. So for instance, a reason code could be card stolen. So if the consumer calls in and says, hey, my card was stolen, I didn't purchase this, then a reason code of card stolen might be attributed to this chargeback. The issuing bank, then it's up to them to investigate whether or not they think that this really happened. Usually nowadays with so much consumer protection, they're going to side with the consumer because obviously they're making money off the consumer because the consumer has one of their cards. They want to keep their consumer happy. So there's a lot of weight going for consumers. The issuing bank will then notify the acquiring bank, that is the acquirer in this case, who took the payment. So if you are a consumer, you go into a store with your Chase credit card from your issuing bank and you go buy a pair of jeans, that place where you swipe at that terminal at that point of sale, that is the processor. That's the acquirer at this point. They're acquiring the money from the issuer. So now the acquiring bank or acquirer has been notified that there is a dispute from the issuer who got it from the consumer. And now it's up to the acquirer to then start the process of notifying the merchant that, hey, there is an issue here with a consumer who bought something from you. They receive the chargeback request, the merchant that is, and now it is up to the merchant to decide whether or not they want to continue and fight this chargeback. So do they want to dispute this? And this is called a representment. Do they want to represent that, no, actually, this consumer bought this thing and I have proof that they bought it? In which case, then all that proof of purchase needs to be sent to the acquirer, who then sends it to the issuer. And then between the issuer and the acquirer, they're able to then come to some sort of resolution of either agreeing or disagreeing. Or you as the merchant can decide, hey, you know what? It's not worth it, me fighting this. I'm just going to take the hit. And basically, this is where it kind of gets interesting, right? Because as a merchant, depending on what it is that you're selling, you could either be out a couple dollars, no dollars. The no dollars isn't actually real because, you know, depending on if you have a digital product for purchase, you might lose out on the cost of that digital purchase. Like maybe you had an ebook that was $10. You might lose out on that $10. But in addition to that, there are fines and fees that you must think about when you receive a chargeback. And these vary. They vary quite a lot. Well, I've seen them as low as a dollar for a chargeback. I've seen them as high as 25. And apparently somewhere places on the internet, they're even more expensive. So, and that's just the fine for a chargeback per each chargeback. So let's say you're a subscription business and you're charging someone for, I don't know, $10 a month for your service for the last 6 months. The consumer looks on their bill on month 7. They go, hey, wait, I don't recognize this charge. Wait, I've been charged for the last 6 months in a row, $10 a month. Well, if you're chargeback fee is $15 per chargeback. And this consumer goes to their bank and they say, I never did any of these charges. All six of them are fraud. Well, now you have six chargebacks at $15 per chargeback. So $90 in chargeback fees are going to be assessed. And the $10 for all 6 months, so $60 in revenue, will be taken out of your account. So as a merchant, not only are you going to be getting a $90 hit, but you're also getting the $60 hit at the same time. So now you're going to lose out on $150 of revenue, which as a business owner or someone managing the business is not good. So first off, chargebacks, obviously very bad. Chargebacks happen for a number of reasons. The next thing to start to think about is how do these chargebacks affect your business at a macro level? A one-off chargeback, not a big deal. A couple chargebacks, not a big deal. But if you are getting into having thousands of transactions, hundreds of transactions, tens of thousands of transactions, whatever that magnitude and scale is of your business, chargebacks, if they're happening often and with enough frequency and scale, can basically flag your account as a high-risk merchant in the eyes of Visa and MasterCard. And most businesses, Visa and MasterCard, are extremely important to the blood lifeline of your business, right? So you want to make sure that Visa and MasterCard are happy with you. You do not want to be on their bad side, because if you do not remedy and correct the volume of chargebacks that are hitting your mid, then you are not only going to start to receive excessive fines. So it's not just going to be the $10 or $15 or $20 per chargeback, but they're actually going to levy additional fines on top of that for every single chargeback that is above whatever the thresholds are. So what are these thresholds? Well, Visa and MasterCard are going to be doing this a little bit different, but essentially Visa takes the number of chargebacks that they receive in a month, and then they divide it by the number of transactions in that same month. So right now we're recording this on March 12th. So what Visa would be doing is they'd say, how many chargebacks has Christian received in the month of March? Let's say it's 10. They say, how many transactions has Christian had in this month? Let's say it's a 1,000, right? So 10 divided by 1,000, my chargeback rate is at 1%. Not good. If I only had 100 transactions this month so far and I received 10 chargebacks, I'd have a 10% chargeback. That would be terrible. But what's great, I don't want to say great because chargebacks aren't great, but what's great is that there are thresholds here. So if you're only doing 100 or 200 or less than 1,000 transactions in a month, a lot of these tiers aren't really going to kick in to the same degree as if you were doing thousands of transactions. So for subscription businesses, this becomes really important to be monitoring and thinking about at all times, because Visa has, and I'll go back before we go further into Visa, MasterCard does it a little bit differently. MasterCard, in order to determine your chargeback rate, what they do is they take the number of chargebacks that they have received this month. So let's say this month or the last 30 days from middle of February to middle of March, you've received 10 chargebacks. Well, they're actually not going to do it based on the transactions over the last 30 days. They're going to do it on the last 60 days, 60 to 31. So they're actually looking more in a historical value, because they're saying, they're thinking about chargebacks in terms of, hey, this customer is probably charging back something that happened in the past, not something that's happening right now. So they're going to kind of penalize you in a slightly different manner than Visa. But at the end of the day, it's indicative that something is wrong. What are the tiers? Well, Visa has the Visa Dispute Monitoring Program, VDMP. They have an early warning warning, standard and an excessive merchant program. And these have to do with hitting different thresholds and percentage rate of chargebacks. You can get all the way up to 1.8% in chargebacks and doing 1,000 chargebacks or more a month. So you've got to be fairly large to be hitting that. And then you're labeled as excessive. If you get into some of these, you get into these programs for monitoring, you have, you're going to be monitored for up to a year. You have to pay fees on excessive chargebacks that are on top of the ones that you're already paying to your processor. And then in addition to that, there are review fees to get you out of the monitoring program. So they're going to take some work and analyze how you're doing as a company to take you out of this excessive chargeback tier. MasterCard does a similar thing. They have excessive chargeback merchant programs. These are triggered by receiving 100 to 300 chargebacks a month if your chargeback rates go above 1.5% to 3% and higher. So you could be excessive or you could be high excessive. And similarly to Visa, they're going to be monitoring. They're going to be actually charging you a lot more for those chargebacks that hit in higher than those aggregate amounts. So how do you get out of chargebacks? I think that that if you're in a chargeback situation where you're getting into trouble, or maybe you're getting close to these thresholds, you've got to be asking yourself, well, what can we do differently? I think that the good news, hopefully the good news, there's multiple ways to be thinking about how to mitigate chargebacks. I think number one is analyzing, like, what are your business practices? So are we providing a clear, coherent user experience? Do our customers or people buying our products understand how much they cost? Are there dark patterns? Are we making it hard for them to quit or cancel? So if, for instance, you make it really hard for people to cancel, then maybe they feel the only way for them to easily get out of your program is to just call their bank and say, hey, I didn't sign up for this. If you have an online way to cancel, click to cancel, you make that easy, then that could make it easier for customers so they don't have to issue a chargeback. Another way is to think about, if you're in a subscription program, think about how do you issue refunds? So if someone wants a full refund, or they want a refund for a month or two, or maybe they're just really, really mad and you don't want to deal with the chargebacks, just issue them a refund. Now, I'm making it sound really simple because, but I know that it depends on your business and what types of services it is that you're giving to those customers. But if it's a digital good and you're not going to really be out much money, it might be a cheaper option to just give them a refund or a partial refund. Play around with that. See what works. See what makes your customers happy. See what reduces chargeback rates. Another way that chargebacks can be thought about is in terms of your payment descriptor. So think about what customers are seeing on their statements when they look at their credit card statement, or when they check their bank account and it says that there was something, you know, debited from their account. They're going to wonder, well, what was this charge for? And if they don't recognize that the charge was for your business because you have not clearly identified either your business or the product that you're selling in the payment descriptor, then that could equal a chargeback. So make sure, you know, do some research, see what it looks like. And it's going to be different depending on, you know, what type of payment method customers are using. So see what it looks like when someone buys your product using PayPal. See what it looks like if they're using a Chase card or an Amex or Visa or a credit union. You know, it's always going to be a little bit different, and see if there's a number attributed to your business, if your website's attributed, or maybe an address for your business. Some of these things will show up nowadays when customers are looking at their bill, and you want to make sure that that's correct. And if it's not correct, then you need to be proactively reaching out to the acquirer, your acquirer, and then saying, hey, I'm not being displayed correctly. Think about also dynamic descriptors, which can help to even further. You can start to add in things like, this is my coffee shop and the person bought a latte. So when they're looking through, they're going to be like, oh, it's that coffee shop I went to. I went to Starbucks and yeah, I bought a latte. Oh, totally. Yep. That's where that $5 charge came from. Although I don't think they're $5, probably more. But anyway, the point being, you need to be clear, you need to be concise, you need to be descriptive, so that way the consumer understands what they purchased and they have no reason to make a dispute with their issuing bank. Now, if all of the above is not working for you, there are services out there that will help you with your chargebacks. And I kind of look at it in two different manners. One is there are companies that will do intercepting of chargebacks. So they'll basically become somewhere in between the issuing bank and the acquiring bank. And they basically are working with Visa and MasterCard, and they're able to flag these disputes. Companies like Ethoca and Verify. And I'm not saying one is better than the other. I'm not saying which way you should go. Do your own research. There are companies like that. And what happens with a intercept is they will monitor for disputes on your MID. And if they see one coming through, then it's up to you to identify and take a look at that. And then you issue a refund. So if you're able to issue a refund before the chargeback hits your acquiring, then what happens is essentially there's nothing to charge back because there's no transaction at that point. It's been refunded. So that's kind of like the name of the game there. And again, you're going to have to pay for that. So you don't get these intercepts for free, but they could stop you from getting into one of these excessive chargeback programs. The other one, or the other area, is the liability shift. So there are companies like Signified, Riskified. I don't know why they're all ending with a D, but anyway, what they do is they do a liability shift and they claim that they have a 100% chargeback guarantee. So essentially they are taking on the risk of any chargebacks. And when they do that, you're actually having your payments processed through them, all these payments, and they're taking on the risk. They're running their own fraud rules and assessments. In which, by the way, that's another area that you could focus on from a how to prevent chargebacks. But we can talk a little bit more about fraud or risk rules after this. But anyway, so Signified and Riskified, you are paying them to a fee to take on that risk for you. And now you don't have to worry about it, but you have to pay them more money. So how is it that you get away from the paying these folks? Well, one way, aside from being more clear about your business practices, is to do some fraud rules on your own side. So start to understand, who is it that is charging you back? How much are they charging back for? What's the frequency that customers are doing their chargebacks? Start to look into the data, the analytics, the segmentation of cohorts. Do you see chargebacks coming from, I don't know, prepaid cards? Do you see it coming from specific BIN ranges? Are there debit cards where you see a lot of chargebacks coming from? You can tailor your fraud rules to lower your risk profile by enforcing rules like, hey, if I see this BIN range, I won't accept payments from this BIN. So maybe you identify that people are using specific types of cards. And this goes back to criminal fraud, right? The three different types of fraud. And you've said, hey, you know what? I've found out through analysis that these are just not cards that I want in my system. So create fraud rules that when those cards are being used, that you don't accept them, that you message to the consumer, hey, you need to use a different type of payment method. Because I don't think you don't need to tell them that you don't think that they're going to be a good consumer, because you don't always know, especially in card not present transactions. But by putting in rules, you can help to save yourself as a merchant some headaches, not all headaches, but some. Another area, you know, if you're in a retail business, making sure that you get that signature, making sure that you have some sort of proof of purchase. When you're going into these disputes, that you get into all sorts of headaches, you got to pay someone to do the representment. Then you got to worry about the representment fees. You don't get to represent for free, by the way. So if someone does issue a chargeback, if you want to fight it, you got to pay to fight it. So again, you got to start to think about, well, how many different vectors do I want to throw at this? How big of an issue are chargebacks to my business? Is it something that I can live with? Is it something that maybe I just don't care enough about which is fine. Like if your chargeback thresholds, your chargeback rate is really low, then maybe it's okay. It's okay. You would just absorb it as a cost of doing business, unfortunately. Another thing you've got to think about for chargebacks is, what do you do with these consumers when they issue a chargeback? If you're in a consumer-based business with subscriptions, do you allow them to sign up again? Do you cancel their membership to your program? Or do you allow them to continuously get access to your services, even though they've done chargebacks and kind of shown their cards, so to speak? They've shown that they're willing to go to the mat. They're willing to take money out of your pocket. So think about what your messaging is to your consumers if a chargeback occurs. Think about what your policy is. Talk to your legal team. Talk to your finance team. Think about, how do you want to handle this? Also talk to your fraud team. But I think all of this goes back to consumer experience. So the better your consumer experience is, the more transparent you are with them about what they're purchasing, the easier it is that you make it for them to cancel or to receive a refund, the lower your chargebacks will be, and the less you'll have to spend on this, and the more you'll learn about your customers. So that's it for tonight, or today. I guess it's almost midnight for me recording. Thank you for listening in to the Monetization Matrix, and I hope to be coming to you soon with some interviews. So that's what's going to be coming up next. I'm talking with a lot of folks right now. We've got some good stuff coming up. We're going to be talking about loyalty. We're going to be talking about engagement. We're going to be talking about pricing. So good things to come. Thank you for listening in. Tell your friends, and thanks again. Bye.
Remember to hit that subscribe button and tell all your nerdy friends.